evening. Welcome to the Solera Report. Today is February 9th, 2017. I'm Counselor Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. The web presentation for the wrap-up is complete. I would really encourage you to go take a look at it. You can link to it from solera.com. It's right in the middle column on the blue column. The PDF will be available next week and the hardcover the following week. You really don't want to miss this one. It's superb. Dr. Joseph Farrell Crowdfund, we're celebrating the successful completion of the Phase 1 funding. We're ordering the organ this week. You've signed the contract, and the money will go in, and we'll have it ordered by Monday. So we're going to celebrate in Louisville, Kentucky on May 13th. We mailed out an invitations to donors this week, and then we posted it for members and subscribers, both at Keys of Death Star and Solera. And then we'll put it in the update for subscribers next week. As I said, Phase 1 is now funded, and we're proceeding to implement, and the Phase 2 funding has begun. I'm going to be in Netherlands in early April. It'll be interesting to see what's happening right after the elections. I'm working on a webinar series with the sponsors of the Breakthrough Energy and the Secret Space Program, so stay tuned for more on that when we are ready to announce. I have a speech in Southern California on April 20th. And we're trying to organize a joint event either a little bit before that or after that with Health Freedom Network, and so I'll keep you posted on that when I'm ready. I've mailed out the link for the Australian trip with Richard Dolan and Jason Bowden-Smith in 2018 to those who've expressed interest. If you have expressed interest but didn't get an email from me, please let me your customer service know. I'm going to give the interested parties until next week to sign up and put the deposit down. And if you want to be on that first round list, just send me an email or send one to customer service. The trip is limited to 20 slots. Seven are now reserved, and that leaves 13 available. So if you want to make sure you're in, do let me know. The prayers for our little prayer book for 2017, we still have copies available. They're free, so if you want one, just email customer service or call or send a self-addressed stamped envelope to our P.O. Box, and we'll send you one back. You can read more about it on the homepage, and again, they're free. Our theme tonight is Let's Get Into the Details. I want to talk a fair amount about what's happening in Washington. I'm going to continue to, at least for the first quarter, because this is the first 100 days is always a very instrumental, very impactful time. Successful operations in the federal government, which is an enormous and very complex bureaucracy, requires mastery of the details. The first thing you want to do is you want to get your team in place. It turns out that the president decided to pick a whole bunch of fights before he got his team in place, which makes it now a gruesome experience to try and get your team in place. The Democrats are using all sorts of stolen other sort of minutiae tactics to make life difficult. We now see Secretary of State Tillerson in place. Attorney General Sessions, as of yesterday, is now in place. And then Secretary of Education DeVos is now in place. The administration is still trying to get Mnuchin at Treasury and Price in at HHS, given how important Obamacare is and tax reform. That's both Obamacare and tax reform right there. The only reason a professional politician would want to have this much fight picking before they get their team in place is if you were trying to do a serious Monica Lewinsky professional distraction from what's really going on, but I think that's unlikely. The big Titanic Turner issues that Trump came in saying he was going to do something about was tax reform, Obamacare, and infrastructure. And within the first 20 days, he's gotten essentially deeply bogged down in the mud over those. And part of it is there is not a lot of constituency available to do really honest things on those three things. This is a lot of what he wants to do, the piggies are not going to make big money on. And so, you know, the people who slick things through Congress are the piggies. So on the really substantive issues, he's getting bogged down in the mud. We saw this week Drudge hit him with several tweets over this. Stockman's the former head of OMB and a former congressman from Michigan. gives some very good interviews on why he needed to refocus on what's important, and Forbes do the same. And it shows you the positive impact of independent media, because within 24 hours, Trump came out saying he was going to get something done on tax reform. They're also moving forward on financial regulatory relief. I've asked my attorney to help me take a deeper look at the what Congress is proposing. Trump put out an executive order about sort of the generalities of what he wanted to. The big question here is, are the small banks going to get the relief they need, or are we just going to give more relief to the big banks? And it's a much more complicated issue. Of course, it's part of the danger of the pigs. When you get bogged down on the mud on the things that are really hard to do, then the pigs show up and start pushing for the things they want to do, and they'll grease the skids, as I said, all the way through Congress. And there's tremendous constituency in Congress for what the pigs want, but there's not a whole lot of constituency in the country for what's true, and not a lot of powerful constituency for what's good for people. So that makes something like Obamacare a very difficult Titanic to turn, and you can easily get bogged down in the mud. One of the excuses is the deficit. Now, you notice the deficit wasn't a problem during the bailouts when they gave $27 trillion to the bank. And that's an example of unbelievably powerful forces showing up and putting guns to everybody's head. Again, it comes back to raw political power. Of course, the big issue is not, to me, what things cost. The big issue is, what is the return on investment? If I borrow money at 2% and waste it, then that has a negative return on investment. If I borrow money at 2%, do something that is glorious for the economy and employment and ultimately produces taxes, then it's a good investment. So it's another reason why you don't want the pigs greasing the skids, and that you're, you know, as you watched everything else get bogged down in the mud and the sort of forces gathering around the financial regulatory relief, you started to think, the second thing, so number one, Titanic Turner issues getting bogged down, and the sort of great save by the independent media to keep Trump focused on what's important. The second thing going on is what I call the Empire Strikes Back. The scorpions and the piggies, and these are my profiles. You can read about it. Just do a search on the web on our site for who's who in the transition and see the little pictures of the piggies and the scorpions, the scaredy cats. I talked about all of this in Can We Make America Great Again with Trump, and with John Rappaport, as well as the Trump transition with Dr. Joseph Farrell. Who's who is in the transition is also in the wrap-up, so you can see it there. Anyway, but you're literally, sometimes you feel watching the attack that Trump is the fly in the spider's nest, because they're coming at him every way. One of the questions here is, why are they coming at him as hard as they are? Sessions got approved as Attorney General yesterday, and today Trump signed an executive order on transnational crime, both human and drug trafficking. There's been a lot of speculation as to whether or not he'll go after the pedophile networks and the money laundering networks. I don't know what he's going to do. It's uncertain, but it's very interesting to look at this executive order. I sent a link in it to post it at the site, but you can also get it under presidential actions at the White House, at the White House website. But if he is going to go after those networks, particularly some of the ones around the Clinton Foundation, then it makes sense. If you look at the extent to which he's being attacked, that would make it very, very clear and why they fought so hard to keep Sessions out when he's a senator. So when the Empire Strikes Back, what do they do? Let's take a look at some of the tactics. The first thing you try and do is you target the loyal lieutenants and put space between them and the president. So they're really going after hard after Bannon and Conway. Bannon, I believe that his partner, Andrew Breitbart, was assassinated, and I believe he was assassinated by these networks in part over the pedophilia issue, because on at least one occasion he started to attack the Podestas about that, and I think he was pretty upset about that. So I think they are concerned that Bannon has too much knowledge and has got a, you know, sort of an, he's got a payback probability there. Who knows? But they're working on taking out Bannon and Conway. Time magazine did a big cover story on Bannon, all designed to put space between him and the president. The second thing they do after going after your loyal lieutenants is they go after your weak spot. They figure out what your weak spot is, and then they hit it hard. And they've clearly figured out what Trump's weak spot is. He's got a couple, but one is he's got an alpha male complex about the women in his life, his wife and daughter. So his wife is suing the Daily Mail over an article she did. And if you look at the lawsuit and what's going on, I can't fathom that it's her idea. It truly looks like something Trump would push. And it's a terrible mistake. I mean, there's a great movie about Oscar Wilde about how he got tricked into starting litigation. Then he used it to just trap him and he ended up in prison. So this lawsuit is serious, serious trouble for Melania and the Trumps. There was a Chicago Tribune editorial about it that I put into our top picks, just because you could see the different ways they were going to start to go after the Trumps on this. It was a terrible mistake. And to a certain extent, when you're the president, you just got to let those things roll over you, because they're really hooks. They're trying to hook you in. The second thing is, the Democrats have started an effort to boycott Ivanka Trump's clothing line or stores that carry it. And we see a series of different stores drop the line, and Nordstrom now announced that they dropped it. And then Trump tweeted out on his POTUS email a whack at Nordstrom. If you're the president, you just... You know, that's a real ethical violation, technically, under the law. It may not be. But then Kellyanne Conway got on a morning show, I guess it was yesterday, sometime in the last 2 days since it happened, and then proceeded to tell people that they should buy Ivanka's clothes and, you know, to reverse it. That is a clear ethics violation. Her husband is an attorney. She knows that's an ethical violation. I don't know why she did it. To me, it's very unlikely she would do it unless Trump ordered her to do it, which is a huge mistake. I mean, at some point, you got to say no. Anyway, but you can see somebody very clever is going at him here, and it's a broad-based effort. It's not just one or two people. And basically, Trump is handling it like a political amateur, and it leaves an enormous opening for both ethics violations and political suicide. So he just needs to learn how to function in this milieu, and this is one of the dangers of being an alpha male and not knowing the territory. Okay, so the third thing you do, so you take out the lieutenants, you find the weak spot, and you go there. The third thing you do is you figure out the team weakness, and you go there. And this team's weakness is lack of experience at government process nuts and bolts. If you look at Cheney, when Cheney came in behind who I call Baby Bush, Cheney had incredible mastery of nuts and bolts. And one of the things the Bush team did was over the, it was over a very long period of time, they really got mastery of the courts and appointing the right judges. So they could really operate very silently and visibly and get huge amount done. So, and what you can see is there are too many areas where Trump, coming from the private sector, keeps using a bazooka to shoot a fly. Now, if you look at Pence and the generals that have come in, as well as some of the good civil service, which is in the White House, there are people who know how to handle these things. So, Trump right now really does look like the, you know, the fly in the spider's web, and he needs to start listening to people who can teach him how to play that game. Now, part of the danger is you, with all these things going on, again, that he bogged down, and the people who help him through it are then the people who know how to grease the skids for what the piggies want. So you now have Gary Cohen, National Security Advisor, the former number two guy at Goldman, who's now got about $300 million more dollars in his pocket showing up. And so one of the things they're going to want to do is take out people like Bannon and Conway and make sure Cohen has plenty of is looking good and can get things done in the White House. The other thing is when Trump's looking weak, or, you know, when you've when a couple of these things have gone wrong and you're looking weak, who shows up but the Sharks? And sure enough, Jim Baker was with Pence at the Super Bowl. And this week he had a meeting with Trump pushing for a carbon tax. So you have Jim Baker and a group of Republicans pushing for a carbon tax, which takes things in the complete opposite direction of where Trump promised to go with tax reform. But again, you know, if you can bollocks him up in every area and then the guys who can slick it through show up, you know, suddenly, as he gets more and more frustrated, the danger is he goes with them. Finally, the thing you try and do is you start to put out the notion that Trump's crazy. And that puts space between him and the civil service that he needs to not only master the machine, but really implement and get things done. So you try and say the guy's erratic and temperamental, which he is. But part of what you're watching is a CEO who's used to unilateral action, trying to come to grips with working in a complex matrix organization where he's not the boss. In a matrix organization, there are lots of cross cuts. So Trump is smart enough and hardworking enough to figure it out, but he's going to have a real transformation and learn spiritual warfare. Interestingly enough, Pence can probably teach him how to do it if he'll listen. But here's what's interesting. If you look at the people, and I know many people who tell me they think Trump's crazy, actually what I will tell you is he's deeply sane. Yes, he's erratic. Yes, he's temperamental. Yes, he's a bully. But the reality is if you look at the model that was being implemented before he got there, so if you look at the Clintons' conduct of Libya or Haiti, that's psychopathic. You're talking about genocide, intentional, on scale. You're talking about major, you know, Nazi stuff. This is genocide. And, you know, you drop in a country, you kill hundreds of thousands of people, you steal their gold, you steal their oil, you cull their population. I mean, we're talking about very psychopathic stuff. And Trump is showing up and saying, it's all wrong. And he's right. Now, it's interesting. He's very much, Trump's mother was Scottish. And if you go back and study the Scottish clans, I mean, they're unbelievably warlike, unbelievably fearless. And he's sort of got that sort of alpha male deep reaction against something that's deeply inhuman. And what he's doing is a very brave thing to do. And if you look at what he said about 9/11, what he said about vaccines, what he said about Common Core, what he said about Obama's credential, I mean, that expresses the actions of a deeply sane person. It's quite extraordinary. So if he's doing anything that's crazy at all, it's that he's willing to be president. I mean, you have to be a little bit crazy to want to be president of the United States. So the question is, can he get good at the process and not let his ego get him in trouble? He's got to learn how to play to win in the government process, and you can't let people hook you on your ego. So, you know, I don't think Trump is crazy. The question is, can he learn fast enough to function in a matrix structure, which is not his strength? He's had unilateral dictatorial power in his companies for a long, long time. Okay, so let's turn to the immigration issue. First, I want to read what I wrote in the commentary this week about it. In Money and Markets this week, I will connect the dots between our interview and the recent U.S. ban on immigration from targeted countries. After a country is targeted by war and or disaster capitalism, the natural resources are harvested and the population is culled, from the best and brightest going to Silicon Valley, Hollywood, and Wall Street, to orphans of the poor trafficked to pedophilia networks. Refugees are placed strategically around the United States to help engineer the economy and electoral college, all at taxpayers' expense. One commentator last week pointed out that for the cost of settling 10,000 Syrian refugees in the United States, we could settle 122,000 in the Middle East. The problem is that that would put the culling machine out of business. That is why they are screaming loud and clear. That includes all the grant recipients and do-gooders who make money helping the culling machine go. The system works because no one is required to look at it on an integrated basis. If the Trump administration forces transparency, Americans will have to reckon with our economic. I think it's very important to understand that Trump is a real estate developer. If you've ever owned or managed real estate, particularly the sort of the kind that he does, that caters to the upper end, safety is an unbelievably important issue, both physical safety of the real estate itself as well as the protection from crime. So the relationship between real estate values and the popsicle index is very tight. And real estate owners and operators care tremendously, and it's a big issue for them as an operator to make sure and not tolerate any criminal activity on their property or around their property, because it can destroy the value, can harm their employees, it can harm their tenants, and their it's a very deeply felt thing for very solid human and economic reasons. So there's a tight and generally positive relationship between popsicle index and the real estate. Whereas if you look at Hollywood, Wall Street, and Silicon Valley, you know, their Dow Jones index is divorced from the popsicle index. In fact, it can be quite the opposite. And that's the heart of the problem that we're looking at, because the Dow is making a lot of money on the culling machine, but it's causing a level of dysfunction and problems that is could cause real problem for the real estate owners of the United States. So what's the problem with immigration? There are a couple of things going on. To put a hold on immigration from the seven countries that have basically we've been in the business of destroying, is in part, it's to keep a campaign promise. And so it was one place where Trump could do something very strong and pronounced that was a campaign promise. Second, there is a real issue on the Middle East. We're talking about countries, I think four of which we have no embassy or consulate, or we really don't have the boots on the ground to do proper vetting. The others, there's still poor vetting. So there is a real vetting issue. And there is real danger, given what we have done in those countries and the kind of money we've put, including behind creating something like ISIS. So if you look at the sort of people who have a vested interest in coming and doing some pretty nasty things, there's a real reason to be concerned about making sure there's proper vetting going on. But the third thing is we have a machinery going that I would describe as highly inhuman, where we basically scarf up the best and the brightest from all these areas we go and destroy. Then we round up the best and brightest and offer them jobs in the basically Hollywood, Silicon Valley, Wall Street. And, of course, those people are deeply grateful for the opportunities, because it's a lifeline after their countries have been destroyed. And you know, the intellectual capital may go to Wall Street and Washington or Hollywood and Silicon Valley, but if you look at where some of the other callings go, whether it's slave trafficking or pedophilia networks, the whole harvesting of a human population this way is very ugly. And, of course, there are a lot of do-gooders involved in the process who really don't see the big picture on what they're a part of, and it really is a machinery, starting with the violence that basically engages in the disaster capitalism that takes the country apart. I saw the machinery operate when during the Clinton administration they came in and destroyed my company. They literally went through and culled all the workforce. You know, they took the best and the brightest, and they made sure they got them to work for their companies. They stole the software. It just went on and on, but they literally went through the balance sheet of my company and figured out a way to compost and get the best and the brightest of all the assets and people into their companies and operations. It was basically a disaster capitalism operation at a tiny scale. So I've seen it operate, and it's very, very intelligent and clever the way it does it, and it doesn't miss a dime. It's quite amazing. They figure out lots of ways, different ways to take advantage and use your office space, your furniture, your technology. It just goes on and on. So it's a very inhuman and very psychopathic model. So part of it is he's trying to stop the model where we make money by destroying other people's places and culling them until we build our own place and make it strong. Finally, the Democrats are clearly using immigration to target and move people around the country to basically rig the vote in electoral college for them. The challenge they have, and I shouldn't say Democrats because it's really not the Democrats, you really have the 1% on the Democratic side trying to engineer a population that will support them, basically controlling everything at the 1% and doing very inhuman things. And of course, you have all these issues that you use to front for you. And it's too bad because there are many good and important issues and people who care about those issues. And I don't think they realize what they're fronting for. Meantime, the hypocrisy of the discussion around the immigration issue was just off the charts. It started with Charlie Schumer, who, of course, did not cry big crocodile tears when we dropped into Libya and Syria and destroyed the countries, pulling together a group of refugees from these countries and professing to start crying at the press conference about how inhuman this was. If you look at what we've done to those seven countries and the extent to which Schumer and his pals made money, the notion that he would sit there at the press release and cry. I'm a person who's been exposed to the worst hypocrisy in the world, and it was just, it took my breath away. One of the funnier tweets was David Cullen, professor of chemistry at Cornell, tweeted out a picture of a Berkeley street empty, looking perfect and pristine, no humans on it, saying, and said, Berkeley protests over destruction of seven countries and, bombing of seven countries into oblivion, and pointed out, oh, that didn't seem to be a problem. But my favorite was Piers Morgan, who I'll tell you about later, who's our hero this week, and pointed out the total hypocrisy. And anyway, not surprisingly, we ended up in the courts, and the courts where the big tech companies are, Seattle and San Francisco, ruling against the president. We had a ruling in the Court of Appeals out of San Francisco today, ruling against the administration. And what it basically does is it holds up the stay put on by the Seattle judge, which now means the cases have to wind through the courts. It's going to take months. And the ban or the hold cannot go into effect. There are 130 tech companies standing against the order. I really consider it recruiting through violence. And, of course, the guys in Silicon Valley would say, well, it's not us doing the violence. Everybody's in their little stovepipe and can deny the whole model. I would say that Silicon Valley has arguably become our most immoral industry, even surpassing Hollywood and Wall Street. Silicon Valley was financed with tremendous capital from the black budget, including narcotics trafficking. So we basically, wreaked havoc throughout all the poor neighborhoods in America to get lots of cheap capital to Silicon Valley. We took, I believe, enormous amounts of technology laundered out of the black budget, paid for by the taxpayers, and recruited tons of talent from the culling machine all around the world. And so whether you look at cheap intellectual capital, cheap financial capital, or free technology, Silicon Valley is arguably the most subsidized industry in the history of Western civilization. And what they've done is created a machinery. Its primary goal now turns out to be surveillance and surveillance capitalism, and some of the most inhuman covert operations that we've ever seen. And so whether you look at where their talent and money came from or what their skills and talent is applied to, it's getting pretty ugly. And it wouldn't surprise me if part of the part of the strength behind Trump is the covert guys are sick of doing their dirty work while they get to get the billions. So we see a story this week from, I put it up on the website, about CEOs, including Silicon Valley's, doing a lot of prepping and getting ready to run to New Zealand, in part inspired by Peter Thiel, arranging a New Zealand passport. And it sounded like they're scared of the truth coming out. And it doesn't surprise me, because I think the truth here is much more, is very ugly. If it ever comes out, there's going to be a lot of people in Silicon Valley looking in a mirror they don't want to look into. Now, it's interesting. The Department of Justice could bypass the Court of Appeals process, which could take months, by skipping up to the Supreme Court. But of course, everybody's waiting for the approval of the new nominee for the Supreme Court, who would be the tiebreaker, Neil Gorsuch. So this is just going to make it harder to get the Supreme Court nominee in place. And we have Trump tweeting against the judiciary on all of this, which is a very big mistake. This is not civil litigation. This is, and he's not the CEO of a private company. Again, it's using a bazooka to use a fly. And he's going to have to learn to navigate this machinery quietly. And it's dangerous. If you do something like that, what happens is you lose support from a lot of good guys, and it's a terrible mistake. Anyway, Trump better warn Ben Carson over at HUD to stop engineering the HUD portfolio to help swing in the immigrants for these companies and for the Electoral College. My guess is the machinery at HUD is still going in support of the culling machine, and Trump better get Ben to throw the switch, because a lot of money could be going out the back door. Interestingly enough, Trump won today a new ally in changing the model. Assad in Syria announced that indeed some of the refugees coming to the United States are in fact terrorists. He agrees, and Assad would be perfectly happy to welcome his own people back to Syria rather than being culled by Google and Goldman Sachs. As you can imagine, it's a huge brain drain. What's happening to Main Street is also happening to the seven countries we've destroyed in the Middle East. So maybe Google and Goldman would like to put offsite centers in Damascus. It's funny. This is all, you're throwing up the cards with the turmoil and everybody's resorting. Okay, one final point it's all in the details, or actually the two final parts. It is all in the details. The good news on all of this is that the process is forcing transparency and discussion that can ultimately help break the log jams. As I've said before, when you try and change the model, everybody's doing the waltz, and then suddenly you start doing the square dance, and it's, you know, you got bumper cars. But there are really positive aspects to the storm. The answers for many of our problems are not in Washington. The American, all the different constituencies, whether they're corporate or the general population, are not willing to face the economics and are not willing to engage at the nuts and bolts level. Now, we had a remarkable thing happen this week, which was a huge success, and that is that Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders agreed to debate healthcare on CNN, and it was a huge success. It was a rating success. I thought it was terrific, because they got down into the nuts and bolts. Sanders is a nuts and bolts guy. He was a mayor. Cruz is a lawyer, willing to get into the nuts and bolts, and that's exactly what you need to do. They did it in a town hall forum. And because it was a rating success, I'm hoping CNN will do a ton of those. Because if we're going to turn the Titanic, those are exactly, we need about 10% of the population at least to engage in serious discussion. The second thing that's great about the storm is there's much more interest in local action. People are beginning to look at Washington and say, you know, they can't solve it. We're going to have to do a lot more locally. And that's exactly right, because the solutions are needed on a decentralized basis. Centralization doesn't work, as we can see. I had described on One Money in Markets how I had started to work with one subscriber to help her understand how the money worked in her area, and she was going to document it for me, and I haven't heard back from her. So what I've decided to do is see if we can't do a Solari report where we do it live and everybody can ask questions. And I'm going to give a little tutorial on how the money works in your local area. And then see, we'll put up a commentary and see if we can't get people posting and asking questions, and we really develop a book of information that will help you get involved and take a look at your local areas. So there's lots of talent on Trump's team that can help him learn, but of course the question is, can he learn? The challenge is again to stay focused on doing the Titanic turning functions and not get frustrated and slide down into the piggy and prioritization. That's why I'm so glad to see CNN do this deep dive on healthcare, and I hope they do many more deep dives and redeem themselves from being considered the Clinton News Network. Anyway, interestingly enough, the latest polls, despite all the mud thrown, Americans trust Trump far more than they trust the media. So I'm hoping that will inspire the media to get into some Titanic turning, because that's if you look at what Stockman and Drudge and Forbes and a variety of other people did to get him back focused on Titanic turning this week, it was very, very uplifting, and it's proof positive that if we have enough Titanic turners ready to speak our minds and ride shotgun, things can go in the right direction. So we certainly want to encourage that. Anyway, money and markets. It's amazing how the markets seem to handle all of this with equanimity. The US dollar index is now back up above that 100 line. It's important to remember, whatever the problems the dollar has, the euro has it much worse, and that's an awful lot of money looking for another currency to go into. The long Treasury ETF, TLT, now up 1.65% for the year. The intermediate up 61 basis points, so 0.61%. The bond aggregate up almost as much, 0.59%, and junk flying at 1.63%. Corporations raised over $100 billion in January, clearly lining up low interest rate funds. If you look at the Shadow Stats latest reports, I just read through all their latest ones tonight, the economy looks very, very soft. Employment and M3, according to Shadow Stats, are not rising, but inflation is, and strongly, and there are multiple reports that say it is now. We did a great Salieri report with Charles Hugh Smith and talked about how strong inflation is, but it's really with us. The equities market, the S&P now up a little bit more than 3%, and home builders up almost 3%. The market is clearly strong. They're looking at one of the things really helping them is the financials are being helped by the promise of financial regulatory reform. The major challenge again is if the Titanic turners don't head us in the right direction and we see a lot of the piggy actions, then the markets will get some jumps, but then when the broader economy doesn't move in the right direction, it could turn into real trouble. Anyway, I think as the market's so high, we're going to be in for a long hot summer in equities, and I'm nervous about what happens this year. Europe now up 3.17 percent, so just one basis point ahead of the S&P. It's really moving in lockstep. Again, we have elections in Netherlands, France, and Germany this year. Early indications, I think, are a good chance the EU could come apart. So interesting to see how that impacts the European equity markets. Germany up 3%, developed market minus North America up almost 4%. China has been enjoying stimulus, and I think that's a lot of what's helped the world have sort of a first good 6 weeks. The China large caps up 9%, and China small caps up a little bit more than 9%. So the China stimulus has clearly juiced a lot, and the emerging market ETF up 8.17%. Commodities flat. Gold and precious metals doing very well, though. Gold up 7%, silver up 10.85%. So it looks like the first month of last year when they came out of the box, the star performers, and then oil down 3.63%. Up on the website, I put up a book review for a book called Tracking Mr. Global by Thomas Hupp, who's a great ally of mine. Some of you have heard me use my famous quote from Thomas Hupp many times. The bigger the breakdown, the bigger the breakthrough. Kind of describes Washington right now. Thomas was one of the founders of the farm, very creative, capable person, and finally came to me when we first started to work together and said, you know, I really need to look at why, no matter what people like we at the farm community do to get things to go right, it just keeps going wrong. So I've got to go look at the dark side. And he ended up using the Saleri Report and a lot of other great sources to really sit down and build a curriculum. I sort of call it 101, what is going on in the dark side on this planet. He calls it Tracking Mr. Global. So I put up a review to his book. He's been working on it for many years, and it's finally out. Then Why Congress is Gridlocked, I just put up the red button problem again, and a link to my big article on the federal budget, Coming Clean Beyond the Fiscal Cliff, to help people understand yet again why Washington cannot solve the problem. There's a great introduction to Coming Clean Beyond the Fiscal Cliff, and I strongly recommend it. There's a great new article in the Wall Street Journal on farms. It's up on the website under top picks. Small farms right now are getting devastated. The commodities the last couple of years have just been tough for a variety of reasons. There are major food mergers going on. The smart money is trying to lock up the food supply, as I said during the wrap-up. I would really encourage you to read the food piece in the wrap-up. One of the things I explain is why I'm so concerned about rising food prices and being highly dependent on a corporate food system, and I would encourage you to read it. Our hero this week is Piers Morgan. Who would have thought I would ever meet Piers Morgan? Piers Morgan was always coming out, you know, for gun control, and so I was always adamant. I would always find him very frustrating. Anyway, one of the things I really like about Piers Morgan is he understands the power and importance of what's called the special relationship between the U.S. and the U.K. And when Trump first became president, when the election was first over, he understood the incredible opportunity to have a U.S. president whose mother, Mary Trump, was a Scotswoman. And I put up an interview with Mary Trump on the little video, and you can tell she's a Scotswoman. And Piers, in one interview I saw, made a very cogent presentation on why this could be unbelievable, not just for the UK and America, but for the world, if we could get the special relationship going in the right direction again. And I agree, because the Iraq war and the deaths in the Middle East have done they've just been devastating, I think, for that relationship. Anyway, so what happened was when the equivalent of speaker in Parliament came out and said that he was banning Trump from speaking when he came to the UK, Piers tweeted out, he says, so Burka welcomed the president of China to speak to Parliament but bans the president of the United States. Let that sink in, shall we? So then Alistair Campbell tweets back, it's called standing up for values. You should try it instead of kissing POTUS' ass. So Piers tweets back, you kiss Bush's ass in a war that killed over 1 million people. I think it was something like, you twat hypocrite. Anyway, and then tweeted out, Britain now officially thinks China has more acceptable values than America. This is complete and utter madness. But I couldn't believe it. He started calling everybody on 1 million deaths. I mean, it's so funny that this calling machine is so inhuman and so evil, and it's done such great evil. And yet, if you try and reverse it, everybody comes out and calls you evil, who had no problem with 1 million deaths. That's quite remarkable. Anyway, and part of it is, you know, because all the people who represented the culling machine were very elegant and gracious in their choice of words, and they said wonderful things. You know, it's all yah-yah, but it was good yayan. It was gracious yayan. Everybody could feel good about themselves while they were making money on the gulling machine. So what you're doing is psychopathic, but what you're saying is very gracious and polite. And here's Trump. What he's saying is very erratic and can be very bullyish, but he's proposing to do something that's infinitely more human. And I can understand why the implementation of the order, which was very messy and very poorly done, when you're messing around with people who have green cards, that is inhuman. So part of it was the, just the amateur hour with which it was done. And I think let's hope they've learned their lesson. Because you really, I'm treating it lightly, but you really can't have that kind of amateurishness in things that impact your relationship with other countries. And again, I think 109 people got caught up in that on the first ban. But for those 109 people, it was very inhuman, and it didn't have to happen. Okay, let's go to the movies. Our movie this week is a wonderful movie from Luca Films. Tracy Luca had agreed to let us make it go public. It's called The Finders, and it is the story of a small town mayor who bumps into a pedophilia network, which was called The Finders. And she has to face the political dilemma of working with people who want to engage in pedophilia, which she will have to do if she gets elected to the Senate. And if she's going to, it's Senate or Congress, I can't remember, but she's basically going to go into Congress. And the question is, will she play ball or not? And the intimation being, if she does play ball, her career is over. So it really helps you to understand the vise that a successful politician gets into over these issues. And I think that political dilemma is very important to understand, including to help you understand how it got as bad as it did. Now, why did I want to do this interview? I wanted to do this interview with John Rappaport, and I asked John because to understand pedophilia, you have to understand so many different things. You have to understand control files, secret societies, mind control. I mean, the infrastructure that's gotten built up to facilitate the pedophilia networks is quite old, quite complicated, and very, very serious. And, it's hard to fathom that things are the way they are unless you really have done the research and investigation. But I wanted you to do it because I was concerned that there was a reasonably good chance that we were going to get an explosion of arrests and scandal around pedophilia. So it was going to be much more in the news. Now, interestingly enough, coming up to this new presidential executive order on, it's called Transnational President Executive Order on Enforcing Federal Law with Respect to Transnational Criminal Organizations and Preventing International Trafficking. Coming up to this, we've seen a whole lot of arrests of basically small fry, 465 arrests in California. I'm in Tennessee. There were 60-plus arrests in Memphis very, very recently. We see more in Florida, few in Pennsylvania. It's kind of more came out of Illinois in Nebraska. So a lot of it is small fry stuff. The question is something bigger going to come out in terms of scandal or governmental action in Washington now that Sessions is in place as Attorney General? I don't know. We saw Sessions go into place. We see this executive order come out. I think there is chance of a major scandal. And frankly, if Trump intends to do something and Sessions intends to do something, then indeed it would explain why we're seeing the kind of attack on Trump and his people that we're seeing. It would make a lot of sense. Because this is going to scare Congress and half of Washington to death, as well it should. So there is a chance of a major scandal, whether the administration takes actions or not, I don't know. And because of that, I want you to be prepared. So each one of us needs to think, okay, if there is a major scandal, what does it mean to me? One thing it means to you is if you don't understand how bad pedophilia is among the leadership and the extent to which it's used for political control, you need to. Because You know, I used to try and explain to people when they'd say, "Oh, I'm going to go talk to my congressman." And I said, "It's not going to do any good. You know, he's got a leash on him, and you've got to understand how powerful that leash is." So most Americans don't understand how political control works and how incredibly dangerous and vicious it can be. Anyway, so one, you just need to have the background. But two, if this stuff is going to be in the news and you have kids or grandkids or children in your life that you love, you need to think about what the implications are. One, to making sure they're protected, but two, also to make sure, you know, if this is going to come up at the dinner table, that you know how you want to handle it. I should note that Biden signed up to be a Benjamin Franklin professor at the University of Pennsylvania. Now, I'm not sure if Biden realizes the rumors about Benjamin Franklin being a pedophile, but it would be interesting to see if the same rumors continue to swirl around Biden, given what the executive order is and what might happen, and what it might mean for Penn, which is Trump's alma mater, and mine as well. And it's really frightening, because when I first realized that he was doing that, if you look at the students who are being loaded up with student loans to go to Penn, and then the money that's being thrown at Biden, it is a sickening comment on our entire society. Just sickening. Anyway, so John Rappaport and I have a great discussion. This is a big topic, and there's a lot to touch on, and it's one of the reasons that I put up in the subscriber links enormous number of links to all the different pedophilia scandals that we touch on and some of the related information and some of the related Solari reports. So for those of you who really want to deep dive this topic, there's an enormous amount of information linked, and it's really, I've culled out the best. There are two books in our best books for 2017 in the wrap-up that touch on the subject. One is The Franklin Cover-Up by John DeCamp, and the other is Secret Don't Tell by Carla Emery, which is a history of mind control since the 1400s, since the Middle Ages. And to me, it's the best general introduction to mind control that I've found. Anyway, so there's a wealth of links. It's John Rappaport is very knowledgeable and great on this topic, because it's one that integrates. The only thing I would stress and say again to you, it's important for you to understand this is really going on. It's going on in huge volume. And if we're going to turn around and grow our civilization in a positive direction, this has to be faced. My greatest challenge, as I described in the little video we put up on the commentary, is that most of the people I've known my whole life don't want to look at this. They don't want to go there. And the reality is, if we're going to build a loving and human culture, we have to heal from this. And we can't heal from it unless we can bring sunshine to it. And it's bad. It's been getting worse for years. And it's one of the reasons I was adamant on, why we had to do everything we could do to not let the Clintons back in the White House. Anyway, but I would strongly encourage you to listen to this interview and to check out those links if you want to deep dive. Okay, Ask Catherine. A lot of great questions this week. One person sent in a link to Open the Books, which is one of the groups that promotes accounting or transparent government accounting, and there's a piece on the funding of sanctuary cities, and it's a real eye-opener, and I put it up on the website. And again, I want to do a webinar sometime in the next 2 months on how to map out the money in your place. I'm hoping it helps. One of the things, another link that someone sent in was a link to Eric Holder's arrival in the California State House as their new attorney helping them. And I just want to say to every one of you in California, beware, the hitman cometh. He represents the people who'd love to break up the Constitution. It's the cheap way to get out. If you can get secession going, it's the cheap way to get out of Social Security, Medicare, and the federal pension fund liabilities. And you need to beware the Kingsman scenario and the Chuck E. Cheese to break up your state. There's another article I posted about Republican politicians worrying literally about violence by crowds against them. A couple were concerned about protesters at town hall meetings. I'm not worried about protesters. I'm worried about paid troublemakers getting crowds worked up at the Chuck E. Cheese and the Kingsman scenario coming to play. If you haven't watched the movie Kingsman or looked at the Chuck E. Cheese brawls that I kept talking about last year, you need to do it, because we're talking about technology literally to turn crowds of regular, perfectly decent folk into a group of people who can do violence. Catherine, I just listened to Joseph Nefarium, and it reminded me of what I wanted to ask you, and that is your analysis of the following synthesis of your remarks regarding the rush to acquire farmland abroad by the Chinese and others. The zest for investing in infrastructure by the Chinese and Japanese in the U.S. and Eurasia, including the Trans-Eurasian Railroad, etc., appears that, one, nobody is preparing for nuclear war, if indeed money is the object, as so often suggested. You wouldn't want to spend the dough in order to have it blown up or rendered a radioactive plan of something by atomics. I feel powerfully persuaded that this is correct and that we should not account nuclear war one whit as a possibility. Given such a prediction, what's the best play investment-wise? I agree with you. You know, for years I've heard so many people come to me frozen by fear porn when the Carlyle Group and all the bad guys are buying up everything in sight. I figure they just want to talk everybody into collapse so that they can buy everything cheaper. Anyway, so the best investment, I mean, I think the Asians assume if there's going to be a nuclear war, they don't have to worry about that because we're all dead. So they only have to worry about the scenario where we're all alive. But the other thing, what you see, and you certainly feel it and see it when you're in China, is, you know, they believe in creating and inventing the future, and they're just doing it. They're not waiting. It's a very different mood than it is here. It's just like do, grow, build, invent, create. It's very strategic and long-term in its thinking, and, you know, it's just a whole different attitude. Anyway, but if you look at convergence of per capita incomes, Asia is clearly converging with the developed world. The rest of the emerging markets aren't. And so if you, now you have to be totally willing to volatility, to live with volatility, but there's no doubt in terms of yields or, and long-term growth rates that right now diversified East Asia portfolio, very high quality stocks, particularly ones that get you yields, or to play the derivative play with New Zealand and Australia and those who supply, is where the long-term growth is. I don't know of any good way other than private equity of doing along the Silk Road. I'm sure there are some, I just don't know them. And that's one of the reasons I'd love to get out onto the Silk Road. They say we have nothing to fear but fear itself, and if we don't even have that, the ensuing optimism should open up the values and explain a Trump rally. I previously published that someone who develops real estate is into ruining it as the anecdote for fears of Trump's reputed itchy feeling near the launch button. If I'm wrong in dismissing nuclear war, we are dead anyway. China's purported interest in investing in a bullet train in California must give some credibility to the seemingly impossibility of its secession. Again, I don't think that would mean the instance of nuclear war, but it would be pretty tense, especially if China would be targeted as a potential new China. Again, if this is a rising possibility, then there has to be a plan angle, a planning angle on it. And this is just a quick reaction to Joseph's remarks. Wouldn't the bypassing of the dollar and currency exchanges between China and Japan simply tell us that they have decided to start their own illegal poker game to compete with Tony Soprano's? The main problem for Tony is loss of market share. Yeah, the dollar's market share has been slowly diminishing. It continues to. And again, if you haven't read that Economist article, Dangerous but Dominant, I would strongly recommend. Catherine, I have a few questions for you, having listened to you on the recent Jeff Renz program, but it's late and I can't really summon the thoughts right now. However, I've shared the following thought lately. I went through the first 61 years of my life believing, and this is true, that it was a fault of mine that I was not more tolerant, inclusive, emotionally intelligent, etc., like those on the left. Now I see that there are none of these, but they are hypocrites. What I realize now is that what some comedian once said, white people riot by moving away. In other words, we express our dislike of others by getting away from them. Those unlike us riot by well rioting, which makes us move away and separates them even more from wealth. In a way, I guess that's what makes me feel a little bit better about myself, but worse about people in general. The onslaught against Trump is simply unbelievable in the depth of the hatred. To me, hatred makes no logical sense. It's a deep commitment against something that is inconsiderate of mitigations and allowances and is therefore irrational. And that's where half of our country appears to be stuck. I think it's a lot more complicated if you look at the other, you know, the people who are appalled by Trump. First of all, you have a lot of money and organization designed to encourage them to be so. Second of all, I think the entrainment is a major player here. I also think you have concern about a lot of legitimate issues where Trump and his team are very bad. I think they're weakest. They are, if the weakness in their group is they lack diversity. It's interesting. When I ran my company in Washington, we had a little grid, and we in a company where we would only have 50 internal employees, no more than 50 because of different legal rules. I was trying to get 25 different intellectual expertise in 25 different cultures or countries. You know, and so literally people would run into me and say, oh my God, I got this guy, he's a software developer, but he has telecommunications experience, but his mother's Bulgarian and he speaks five languages, he's a threefer. It's pretty funny. And, you know, but we ended up with an unbelievably diverse group of people who were so good in problem solving because they were diverse. And it was very hard to get them to work together at first. It took a lot of sort of training and some funny exercises, which maybe I'll talk about someday. But once we got it working, God, they were so powerful. And if you look at the Trump team, you got a lot of great people, but they're lacking in certain kinds of diversity. And that kind of diversity, if it's sincere as opposed to forced, I hate affirmative action, could make them much more powerful. And I think it's very important that the sort of more nationalistic crowd get that kind of diversity. And I think a lot of people look at it and say, you know, there's no room for me in that picture, which I don't think is true, but they feel it. The other thing is you certainly have, you know, I think that if I worked for Trump, we would last maybe 5 minutes. Within 5 minutes, I'd be telling him he's a bully and he'd be telling me I was a loser. And, you know, there'd be a real food fight. So, you know, Trump has arguably the worst manners of anybody on the planet. So now when you have to tell a whole world that is living in a bubble and in a state of complete denial and is engaged in something wildly inhuman while they're professing to do something human, you know, that's a good quality. You need somebody who can, you know, use prices and cut through the chase and get some truth going in the middle of that. So I'm not saying that, you know, the bully part of him is, you know, it may turn out to work in our favor. But I do think there are people who, particularly women, who feel very hurt about what's happened in their personal lives and careers over the last 50 years, dealing with highly competitive men who bully. And I worked on Wall Street and had a reputation. I normally took 12 years to become a partner at Dillon Reed. I made it in 8. And one of the reasons was I got marvelous feedback because I worked for all of the sort of erratic, temperamental, bullying kind of people. I developed a real specialty in being willing to work with them. A lot of the other associates didn't want to work with them, and I did because they would, you know, they were some of the few people in the firm that would tell a woman the truth. And so I got good feedback and ultimately got good training. So, you know, I got along. But there's no doubt you have a lot of women in this country who have gotten the short end of the stick. And I think that's been exploited. That's been exploited to sort of help the culling machine politically. If you're more interested in my thoughts on that, I have a series about, I think it's about 8 parts, called Promoting Women, where I get into all these issues, because I think the divide and conquer between men and women in this country is just horrible. Now, I don't feel that way about Trump. I don't, you know, I don't take any of his comments about women seriously. I really don't care. What I care is when a president gives away $27 trillion of all of our retirement savings. That's what I care. I care about the issues that are universal, that affect all of us together. And I don't play into the divide and conquer, because I just have an insider's view of how all of that works, and I know it's all just a big trick. So I don't go there. But the one thing I will say is I really believe that Trump believes that he's very emotionally vested in making America safe. He's gone from thinking he's got to make Trump Tower safe to he's got to make all of America safe. I think it's he really looks at it like a real estate guy. And an alpha male, when he's trying to protect everyone, is a very positive force. If you go back again and look at the stories of the Scottish clans, a great warrior protects the clan. So I think his instincts are to protect us all, and I truly believe it's very, very inclusive. I don't think he, I really don't think he wants to just protect some people. Now it'll be interesting to see the real rubber meets the road over at HUD. And so one of the things I hope to do in the first 100 days is to talk a little bit about what's going to happen with Ben Carson over HUD, because that will be the real test of whether the Republicans take a turn on the, what has traditionally been a very bipartisan racist treatment of black neighborhoods. Okay, hi Catherine. In light of Trump's new add one, cut two regulation rule, is there any chance you could do a Salera report on regulation for those of us in the rank and file laborers that have never run a business or entity that faces it head on? Or maybe you could direct me to archives or other materials that paint a bigger picture of it. I ask because I believe I heard you say you spend the first quarter of every year dealing with numerous and onerous compliance issues with your businesses put upon you by the federal government. I also hear you anecdotally refer to dairy farmers put out of business by food safety rules and discuss Common Core destroying K-12 education and other Salera reports. I'm just wondering if I'm missing the big picture. Do we need more regulation and oversight in cases like Flint, Michigan's water crisis, or is the real issue enforcement of current law, competent and ethical leadership, and community involvement? The real issue is current enforcement. What you see, the game that's been played for decades, is they don't enforce the rules, and then they have a scandal and they say, oh, we need more rules. Then they put on more rules that they also don't enforce, and on you go. And you have very selective enforcement designed to serve centralization. So the question continues. One of Nancy Pelosi's go-to attack lines the last few years is what she calls Republicans' disregard for clean air, clean water, food safety, and the education of her children. However, she sure doesn't get any more specific than that, nor is she likely bothered by chemtrails in the air, fluoride in the water, grocery stores mostly selling processed food, and subpar education and massive student debt. I'm mainly wondering, regulation, what is it? Where is it effective and appropriate? Where does Mr. Global use it to destroy wealth and productivity? Where do government and corporations employ it to steal market share and put entrepreneurs and small business out of business? What shape is it taking sector by sector? Healthcare, education, food, water, safety, technology, transportation, housing, small business, and ideally, what form should it take as opposed to current setup? Sorry if this doesn't make sense. Any feedback is appreciated. No, it absolutely makes sense. Now, you could write 12 books on what you just asked me, but here's what I would recommend. Start. I just wrote a book review for a book called Technocracy Rising by Patrick Wood. So I want you to read that. Then we did an interview with Rosa Quar on Agenda 21, and you can read her books as well if you want, but just listen to the interview. And then I have a piece on shadow work, and I've asked our blogmaster to post the link. It was in an article called What's Up This Fall 2015. So I would read Technocracy Rising. You can start with the book review I wrote. Listen to the Salera Report on Agenda 21 with Rosa Quar, and then read my piece on shadow work. And then when you've done that, just send in and say, okay, I'm ready for the next step. But please understand, we need lawful enforcement. If we had simply instituted and enforced the United States Constitution with respect to the money, most of these problems wouldn't exist. I would like to suggest that an excellent topic might be President Trump's insistence on rolling back the Dodd-Frank and its Volcker rule and how this could affect investors. Being an investor myself, I would not like to have protections taken away from me, and I would love to hear what you have to say about this and the most effective way we might prevent Trump from carrying this out. If I might seem over-concerned, please tell me so. First of all, it won't be Trump carrying it out. It'll be Congress. Congress is the real problem here. I've asked my attorney to help me do a review. This one is going to be in the details. The big issues are going to be, are we helping the big guys or are we helping the small guys? Because the small guys deserve a lot of regulatory relief from this stuff. Remember, when they pass the laws, Dodd-Frank and all of that stuff, a lot of it was more rules on the innocent, not stopping the bad guys. The thing most important we need to do is enforce the Constitution and the provisions of the Constitution related to money. Whenever you hear anybody say we need to change the Constitution, no. We need to enforce the Constitution, and since we're not enforcing it, we don't need to change it. So don't ever let them muck with the Constitution. Dear Catherine, Jim Rickards is claiming that the deal has already been set by the IMF to introduce a new currency, which will begin on 21st of April this year. I would like to know if you've heard any rumors about this in your opinion. Okay, all last year I had to beat back Jim Rickards' fear porn on the Chinese currency going into the SDR, I guess it was in October, and it was supposed to be the end of the world and blah, 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 blah. This went on, and I had to basically remind everybody, please don't listen to Jim Rickards. T.D. Jakes is one of my favorite pastors. He has a great quote. He says, you know, my elevator only goes to the first floor. If you're going to go to the basement, you got to get off and take the stairs. So here's my personal experience. My experience with Rickards is I just have found him to have low integrity. He's either talking his book or his control file or trying to make money. He does a lot of fear. I'm not into spreading fear. The other thing is I'm not into predicting the future of the world. You cannot predict the future. Jim Rickards doesn't know what's going to happen. Nobody does. We're in a very organic period where things could go a lot of different ways. And that's why I spent a lot of time preparing the scenarios in the annual wrap-up. There are four scenarios. We did a great scenario planning Solaria report last year with Eric Best. Please listen to Eric Best's scenario and read the scenarios. If you don't like my scenarios, come up with your own scenarios. But you need to be able to rock and roll in the world as it may possibly be. If you want to use Rickards' scenarios, one of your scenarios, great. But just do not fall into the trap of getting a certain picture of the future. It's not going to work that way. So I just think the best way to live is to delete from your life anything that's not a high integrity person and a high integrity source. And I really make an effort to bring the people of great integrity to you on the Solaria Report. Also, Simon Parks on his website under news and blog updates has claimed that Trump has ordered an audit on all government and non-government gold. Don't know how they can audit non-government gold, as he hopes to get us back on the gold standard, and if that is not feasible, the silver standard. Parks also claims that the U.S. federal agencies on behalf of Trump raided and seized computer equipment related to vaccinations. Now, Simon Parks is a very interesting person. I listen to him on occasion. I think we just put up one of his videos on the Under Top Picks. He often makes sense. I don't always understand what he's saying or necessarily agree with it. But I listen, and I think he is a person who tries to have integrity. I don't know about the audit of government and non-government gold. I've seen nothing to indicate that that's happening. It wouldn't surprise me if Trump had ordered it, let alone that he ordered it to be classified. They do have the ability to audit non-government depending on intelligence agency capacity. Given that everything is tracked by artificial intelligence, phone calls, email, certainly all the wire transfers and bank checks. So if you used bank money in the bank to buy from a dealer, that's all recorded and tracked. So I certainly think they have the ability to audit non-government gold as well as government. I also don't know what the truth is. I've seen that said about the federal agencies and vaccinations. I don't know if it's true or not. It's very important in situations like this to not make a decision, is it true or not, but simply to work with probabilities. So if Park says it's true, it might be true, and you just need to live with the fact that maybe it is true, maybe it isn't. I think, again, Parks is a sincere guy, but his sources may not be reliable. So, again, don't fall. The biggest danger in this environment that we can fall into is needing certainty. And I can't tell you how many charlatans and fraudsters prey on people's need for certainty. If he did take those actions, it would help explain the uproar and the highly destructive press. Really insulting Business Week and Economist covers, but it would explain. But also, you know, the executive order, what he intends to do as a result of that and have Sessions do, that could also explain it. Hi, Catherine. We hope this email finds you doing well and enjoying life. Someone sent us this article and we found it quite interesting. Sounds like there's quite a rise occurring in the Earth-Schumann resonance, and HeartMath is referenced. Do you know about this? We wonder if it is naturally occurring or if it could be affected by CERN, space-related activities, or HARP. I've always believed that the rise in the Schumann resonance is very, very important, but I have no expertise on the subject whatsoever. I've asked Joseph Farrell to look at it and consider it, and I will certainly ask him in the next time he comes on. But if my intuition is right, I think it is going to contribute to forcing more and more transparency, which I think is good. They continue, on another note, you mentioned in recent Money and Markets that you and others had considered other options of places to live if Hillary had won the election. We do not tend to want to relocate. However, if the need arose, we sometimes think about what the options might be. Would you be willing to share your thought process in regards to potential areas or places? What criteria do you consider? If you're interested in this kind of thing, I would really encourage you to get a magazine called International Living. It's very positive on living abroad. It tends to give you the positives, not the negatives, but there's a lot of nuts and bolts information on some of the issues and can save you a lot of time and effort in investigation. But just be careful to take it with a grain of salt. Everybody's different, and I think the important thing is if you really are going to live someplace else is to try it. You know, don't just go. I think you need to rent and experience it. A lot of people buy a second home and then get to know a place and then move there more permanently. What I would do is I would look for a place where you know people and they know you. I don't think you want to be alone in a strange land. So it's important to have institutional knowledge and relationships in a place. So, and that's the advantage of going and getting to know people over years before you possibly consider living there. I would want to live in a place that's lawful with a low crime rate and a very human culture. I would also want a place that's very low cost. I think there are tremendous advantages to being in a low cost area and one with lots of fresh, low cost food. I think that makes a lot of sense in this environment. I would want to be as far away from a place where covert networks are interested in. If you're way out in a fairly remote area, they tend to be not interested, but you clearly don't want to plop down on top of an underground base. Obviously, good weather, sunshine. You'll read about something called a blue zone, areas where people live long life. So you want a place where people are healthy. It's a very healthy environment. Clearly, it helps to know the language, and it helps to resonate with the place personally. If the Clintons had won, I would be looking for a place that was outside of the NATO region in the hopes that that might, you know, that the satellite coverage might not be as intense. So those are some of the issues. The International Living tends to have very good information on costs and healthcare arrangements and sort of visa and other requirements to live in different places. But I think there are a surprising number of places with good weather and low cost that can be pretty nice if you know people there. But I would, again, I wouldn't just move someplace. I would try lots of different places. Hello, Catherine. then I got, oh, so I have a series of questions and I'm just going to summarize. Interestingly enough, I got three questions or comments from three different subscribers this week on HUD housing. And you really kind of wonder as you read it, I wonder what Ben Carson's going to turn the Titanic at HUD, because I suspect that the culling machine is doing a lot with immigration, or doing a lot with HUD money to facilitate the the import of people and moving them around for various reasons. So it'll be interesting to see if Ben turns the ship, but you all are noticing all sorts of funny business with HUD, which doesn't surprise me. And again, we'll look to do something on place-based data to help you understand how the money works in your area. Catherine, when a young person dies and their organs are harvested, does the family receive any money? Who financially benefits? I don't know anything about organ harvesting. It came up this week because I've been looking at what is going on in Chicago. You have people disappearing through Holman Square. We did a show on Holman Square with Cynthia McKinney and Junius Ricardo Stanton and a little bit more than a year ago. And Trump, of course, had a hissy fit over the murder rates in Chicago. And if you look at the way it happened, there was something that was really angering him about it. And my guess was, especially now that Obamacare has gotten everybody's data into federal databases, my guess is you may be seeing people targeted for their organs. There's a lot of money to be made. And, you know, a good heart or lung can be worth $100,000 or more. So my concern, looking at what was happening with Chicago, were people being harvested for their organs, and was that a big business? Anyway, so I have gotten a bunch of books I started to order books to understand more about the organ harvesting subject, but I've got a long list of things I want to learn about this year, and I can't promise, but good question, but I don't know the answer. Somebody wrote in, I watched your YouTube of your talk on Follow the Money. It's my speech at Secret Space Program in 2014. When you talk about Enron, it reminds me of Theranos, or is it Theranos, from specious services to a board composed of the usual suspects. I've tried to understand what the deal was at that company. This is the blood testing company out in Silicon Valley with George Shultz in the leadership. Someone who wants to collect a lot of blood and DNA at low cost from a lot of people. I'd love to see someone dig and figure out what was really happening, especially if you look at who was on the board. And, you know, to me, my guess is it's another example of how dark forces find some fluffy woman and get her to front for them. I doubt if she really knew what was going to go on at that company. I wonder. But it's a reminder, if it doesn't work, how the fluffy woman can end up taking the fall for everybody. Anyway, so there's a story there. I don't know what it was. Clearly, there was a French reporter working for the Wall Street Journal who really made a certain distance and certainly has gotten the company really downsized, if not destroyed. But there's a deeper story there, and I would love to know what it is. Hi, Catherine. I'm trying to understand Trump's authorization of action in Yemen. Doesn't that serve the Saudis? I thought he would step back from Saudis given their terribly destructive actions. Your thoughts? Good question. I don't know the answer. My guess is that was long planned and they decided to let it go forward. But you would know Yemen has withdrawn permission for U.S. anti-terror ground missions. You had a lot of civilians killed, which is very unfortunate. Dear Catherine, a few weeks ago you mentioned choosing a trustworthy broker. Can you share any specifics on this? How, where to look? Any lists? I cannot find local brokers anymore. The best way to find a good broker is to talk to multiple people knowledgeable in the business, then interview them, then get references. Ideally, you want a broker who's working at a firm with strong institutional reasons to want to protect their name and reputation. They're not anywhere near as many brokers, experienced brokers around as there used to be. One is the economics have changed, and most people prefer to be an investment advisor, but some investment advisors will work with you where they don't require the discretion to trade on your behalf, so you can review every trade before it's done. So be open to looking for both a broker and an investment advisor is what I would do, but I would go through personal recommendations. Hello, Catherine and John, and this one was to both me and John. I thank God for your courage and your ability to help me stay balanced in a wacko world. John, your latest on college kids and big pharma is over the top. Catherine, as always, your interviews, insights, and writings are excellent. I read the Salieri Report faithfully every day. Will Attorney General Jeff Sessions actually enforce the law and prosecute Hillary Clinton? I don't know. Benghazi and Haiti are of particular interest to me. Clinton's complicity and outright guilt are more than apparent. But does Sessions have the power to enforce the law, or will we see more stalling and drifting? Sessions has all the power he needs. If for any reason he needs to recuse himself on Clinton, the people who work for him have all the power they need. But the only thing that would prevent it is if Obama did give Clinton a basic secret immunity pardon before he left office. Now, there's certainly no public one, but in theory, there could be a secret one. My guess is that he didn't, but there's no way to know for sure. If you look at the executive order that the White House signed today, it certainly looks like the administration intends to turn the Titanic and drain the swamp. If actions against Clinton help him do that, then it's good. If it detracts from doing that, then it's bad. So it's back to this old piggies versus scorpion thing. You want to offer the piggies a pathway to get on board and make money turning the Titanic. So you want to have a truth and reconciliation. You generally use scandals to take out the scorpions and get the scorpions to stay in the corner. So if Trump does something about pedophilia, he's going to need to do it wisely. Whether he does it or not, I don't know. Whether he takes the Clintons out or not, I don't know. The goal of the administration can't be to take the Clintons out. The goal of the administration has to be to make America great again, and everything has to fit in and pull in that direction. And so the answer is we don't know, but it's interesting to see this order plop out after Sessions is confirmed, and it's interesting to see this order. I would encourage you to read it. So clearly something's up, particularly if you see the explosion of pedophilia and child trafficking arrests around the country. So something's definitely up. So stay tuned. It's a big mystery, but if you look at the pushback in Washington, a lot of powerful people are scared to death. Okay, in closing, next week, February 16th, Why We Love Bach with Dr. Michael Linton. We've had just a revival of Bach interest among our subscribers, in part because inspired by the crowdfund, because Bach was an organist and a great writer of organ music. Then on February 23rd, Healthcare Independence with Dr. Laura Thompson. What I'm seeing around the country is the people who know how to navigate and use both holistic and traditional medicine well are being very successful, both health and financially, because they're not being wrecked financially by health problems. And so I thought I'd get Laura on and help you understand how to navigate the two and get the best of both worlds. And it's really been inspired by people who are doing that, and then by people who are not doing that and are just getting terribly drained as they flail around in both systems. Okay, and then March 2nd, I wanted to bring Richard Dolan back. We've been talking about the administration with both John Rappaport and Dr. Farrell, but I wanted to bring Richard back and talk about the deep state and the Trump budget politics and look at it from his point of view. So until next week with Why We Love Bach with Dr. Michael Linton, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. As you can tell from our discussion tonight, there are thousands of them. But if you're not in one, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.